Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to the DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always is my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. Today's episode, we're going to go ahead and finish up our first movie, Gone, going scene by scene, hopping in, taking a look at what we like, what we don't like, and just a really great process that every filmmaker should do. So we decided we'd go ahead, hop in, take these episodes to dive through our past filmography and just kind of give you an idea of what we like and what we didn't like and what we would do if we want to go ahead and change it or redo it, because that's usually a question that we do get within our Discord community. Speaking of which, we make movies for our fans, with our fans, and the place to be to take advantage of all of this and also casting for our open features and auditions that we have for each of our films is going to take place in our Discord, so be sure to join that. You can also take a look at our newest film, The Haunting of the Murder House, which is now on Amazon Prime. So please go ahead, take a look at that, rent it, give it a review. We would greatly appreciate that. So, Brendan, I think a good place to kind of start off is just our little recap of Gone. I think, you know, we've kind of mentioned there's just a lot of structural issues when it comes to the plot and pacing, just kind of pushing it forward. But I think that's really just something you see with a lot of indie movies. I think, you know, the quest for every filmmaker is really just a quest to get good at pacing. So what do you kind of think of Gone and where it's at as we're halfway through the movie right now?
I mean, it's flowing. It's flowing slow. I mean, just it's a learning process. This is our first one. The fact that we got a movie completed is a win. So I can't be too critical on it. I actually think for a first movie, this one probably exceeded my expectations. I remember when I was completed with the movie, or when we finished the movie, I was very happy with it. And I'm still very happy with it. I think it's just for where we were in the process to be able to make this movie, to get it uploaded to Amazon, to get our money back, was a huge win. I think the big takeaway is that we looked at it, we took a hard look at it, and we realized what we did well, we realized what we need to work on, and we got better. So I think that's just the name of the game. You have to take as many shots as you can, you have to give yourself realistic feedback, and you just have to understand where you are in the process. And where we were in the process, this was our first movie. So we didn't have the experience. We didn't know how to craft a screenplay. I was still under the impression that, hey, if you know we can write books, we have a publishing business, it should be very easy to take our stories from the books and turn them into movies. It's completely different beast. There's a reason why a lot of authors to translate their books to screenplays, they have somebody else do it for them. It's just a completely different skill to write a screenplay than it is a book. And it can be very difficult for an author who's used to very long works to pace a movie properly with the screenplay. So I think that was like the biggest mistake I learned. I was like, well, I'm going to start a publishing company because movies and we can learn how to tell a good story. And we did. We definitely learned how to tell a good story, how to make good characters. But I think I just underestimated how difficult it was to go from books to movies. But Gone, you know, is our first step and I'm proud of it. It just suffers from a lot of mistakes that, you know, we learn from, but I also seen a lot of indie movies. So if you don't want to avoid the mistakes, if you want to try and figure out what we did wrong and some pitfalls that I see in the indie world, you know, listen up, because we're going to tell you what not to do.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the main reason, you know, looking to do the exercise we're doing right now, is just to say, hey, this works, this doesn't work. And, you know, I do want to echo everything that you said. Gone was a major, massive success. I think any finished film, especially your first one, is a massive success. If we never got this done, it would have completely changed DBS Film. If it didn't make money, it would have completely changed DBS Film. So, I mean, when you look back at this movie, it does hold a lot of value for us. But again, that being said, you know, look back to anything, you know, your first painting, your first song, if you're like, you know, playing piano or anything like that, first recital, it's going to be rough. And I think that's part of the fun of looking back on these things and, you know, being able to say, wow, look at how far we've come and look at what we're doing. So to pick up on Gon, we have our hero who literally has been talking to himself the entire half of the movie. We mentioned, you know, besides his mom and a phone call, there really isn't much way for him to interact. And that was kind of one of the issues with pacing. The big scare right now is the cars didn't work. His car didn't work. He walked over to the two other campers. Their car didn't work. So now they decide to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go ahead. I will walk 15 miles into town. You stay here and we'll get a tow truck and we'll be fine. And I just have to have a side note on this one because this is one of my favorite dialogues that we have. When Brad's talking to Stacy, Stacy very slightly rubs her stomach and Brad has the instincts to say, oh, are you pregnant? And I think what ends up happening is it goes back to our thing we were talking about in the last episode. I think a lot of first time screenplay writers or first time like movies, they have a lot of really random scenes that sprinkle a single line of dialogue in there that, like, you know, add the addition to the story. And you see it all through our movies in the first few. You know, we'll have one line of dialogue that explains some element, you know, making mom proud. You weren't there when dad was dying. Like, there's all these little tiny single lines that are peppered in there. And unless you can reinforce it two or three times, it's basically useless to the plot. So do you kind of want to talk about how we see a lot of scattered details that you would think, oh, okay, it does spice up the story. But unless you're willing to devote two to three lines of dialogue to it or have it progress through a story, it usually doesn't do much. And it almost kind of hurts you, as we saw with like the Suicide House, where we had this very long story of what the plot was, but because it was so, you know, basic and not fleshed out, you ask people what the plot was and like, I have no clue.
This is a screenwriting mistake. And you see it a lot from amateur screenwriters. And this is like, we just weren't very good at writing screenplays. It's just like, all right, here's my scene. How do I make this even more intense? She's going to be pregnant. And it's like, all right, if it like has anything to do with the plot or where you're pushing the movie forward, then yes, that is completely fine. But when you just start to sprinkle in these little things where it's like, they're just over the top, like dramatic things, they almost just become very cheesy. And please don't ever have one of your actresses who's not pregnant have one of the characters ask them if they're pregnant. This scene still kills me, and I cannot believe we actually did this. So for the actress who played Stacy, I am so sorry. You know, it's just not understanding how to write a screenplay properly. So I think that was just the main thing. And we did it multiple times. I mean, the devil in the room probably is the one that's the most dramatic. There's just so much drama. Every little dialogue, every little scene is just dramatic. And I think there's just a difference between adding tension and spice to a scene versus making it very dramatic and cheesy. And I think it's just a skill. I think you have to get through it. You have to learn through it. So as an independent filmmaker, I'd avoid it. I just focus on the plot that you're trying to tell and just keep that story running. And then if you have the opportunity to do it in a clever way, feel free to do it. But I mean, if you look at this movie, we're like, what, maybe 5 or 6 minutes past the halfway mark. We maybe have 6 or 7 like really dramatic things that are just over the top drama that I think just give this movie a very cheesy feel to it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all those little things that add up. That's always a fun one to me, though. So they basically talk. They say, hey, you know, he'll be fine. He'll walk in there. They split up. Then we have Brad walking around. He does nothing. And then he walks back to the cabin to Stacy. So we have them split up, go back together. They just say, hey, he hasn't been back yet. So they walk down the road. And they say, okay, well, it's getting late. So, you know, let's let's see where we can go and like basically find them. They don't find them. They go back. And then Brad, in the middle of the night, he sees Stacy getting ready to go out. And he's basically like, it's late out here. You know, we're not going to find them. Let's just wait till tomorrow and then leave. So it's kind of, again, you know, with nothing scary really happening in the sense of where they're at night until they go out in the middle of the night there. So they basically walk down a road, nothing happens. They go back to the cabin and then they go back out at night and we actually get a good drag scene. So we kind of have a little bit of fluff getting them to the cabin again. They essentially do the same thing twice. And then we do actually have a really good scene of Matt getting pulled out. So I think that's kind of, you know, again, the first real other dramatic moment besides the intro comes with the pull of Matt. And that's right around that 19 minute mark. So, you know, you kind of have 20 minute gap almost between the two pop scares there. So do you want to talk again? I think the big thing we look at now with pacing is you really want to be hitting with multiple pop scares over and over again, just to keep a pace of a movie up and running.
Yeah, I think the pull should have been at the halfway point. I think that would have been a better, it happened too late. There wasn't enough suspense in the beginning of the movie and this happened too late. In the movie, like if they should have met this couple earlier in the movie. So if you want to keep the same dynamics of the movie, I would have had them meet this couple earlier and share drinks or something. So then at least they could like explain themselves and you kind of know who they are, maybe do a little bit of a lore dump. And then, you know, he goes back, you hear screaming and the boyfriend's gone and he gets taken. And then it's him and the girlfriend of the other guy, which I actually think is a really cool dynamic because it's like, oh, now I'm with this chick who I have no idea who it is. It's new. And I'm looking for her boyfriend who I just saw got dragged into the woods. And then their cell phones don't work and the cars don't start. Now you have a whole nother movie heading into the climax, or not the climax, like the halfway point of the movie. So at this point, you're like, look, your tension's there because you saw somebody already get taken. There's tension because you're now working with someone of the opposite sex of the guy who got taken and you don't really know them too well. And then you have even more tension because your usual devices, how to get out of that situation, which is your cell phone, your car, are not working. So I think that just by moving things around, you can take this movie and actually fix it up a little bit. We just didn't have the overall plot and the structure were there. It was just in the wrong order and it wasn't like spiced up enough essentially.
Yeah, I think, you know, you really want to look at, again, it's the one scare that we have. So we were using it as like a main scare, but this now, the pool scare would really be kind of a first lower tier scare for us almost, you know, something we get out of the way quicker. So this starts creating a weird dynamic, in my opinion, because it goes back and forth between, I mean, at this point, Matt just got pulled and Brad's like, hey, we need to calm down and be rational here. Could have been a bear. You know, that apparently worked for a little bit.
Did he say it was a bear?
Yeah, he says it could have been a bear. So he's like,
that's just as bad. If there's a killer bear out there.
It doesn't solve it entirely, but that was his logic of why they needed to stay and wait until the morning to leave. So you have them basically going there and now they're there in the morning. So they stayed and now it's daylight.
I guess a bear is not as good as an alien or not as like, if I was out there in the woods, I'd rather have a bear out there than an alien.
I mean, it could be something there, but that's the line that he used to calm her down. Now it's in the morning time and she's crying now. And she's like, well, this is terrible. You know, he disappeared in the forest and they can't find him. And then what ends up happening that's so odd to me is it literally like the characters flip and Brad then becomes super negative and she's like fine and chipper, even though she just lost her fiance and they were dead. But basically it goes from him being pulled to it's the next day in the morning because, you know, like, hey, we can't go out there. We need to wait. We'll walk back to town and then we'll get some help. So now we're in the morning And I think, honestly, this is a big example. There's like three nights in this film and it's 30 minutes. And I mean, like, we've reduced our stuff down to now, like, when you get to that takeoff point that we always talk about in the horror movies, and we try and get you there halfway or sooner, you're locked in for the rest of the night. You're either getting out alive or you're dying. And I think this is something where a lot of filmmakers will naturally space things out. And like, it just makes no sense, man. I mean, you know, to have her stay and then wait another day. So you kind of want to talk about how this is something we see a lot. And this is something that even we did, where you almost add a lot more days than it needs to be, instead of just trying to fly, take off, and then run with it.
Yeah. If you're an indie filmmaker, here's something to help you out. Everything happens in one night. It does a lot of things. Number one, you're going to avoid what Kel's talking about, which is having these like spacing issues. Number two, when you have multiple days, you have multiple wardrobe outfits, and actors are not very good at staying in the proper wardrobe, so you're going to have continuity issues. If you have it all in one night, you're wearing the same stuff and you're good to go. It's much easier to pace a one night movie than it is to do where you break it up. And we've had people be like, I don't even know what day it is. I'm like, well, what does that even have to matter? But the audience cares, man. So if you have one night, if you're an indie filmmaker and this is your first movie, try and do it all in one night. If you're doing a horror movie, just take your movie, condense it into one night, and you'll be in a much better space, because by doing one night, you're forcing yourself to take all the action, have it condensed. And it's going to be condensed. It's going to be faster. There's going to be more tension. It's going to be an all around better movie than having to spread it out. Cause when you spread it out, they have to go to sleep. They have to wake up. They have to like do all these blocks. Your movie's going to be very blocky, but you're also just going to have like, when they wake up, there's going to be no tension. So you're already going to have a couple scenes in there where there's going to be no tension. If you have it all in one night, especially once stuff starts to happen, it's very easy to stack on top of each other. I think you're going to have a much easier time making that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to the core, you know, thing that we talk about really again is pacing, and having it in one day means you're going to have pretty quick pacing. So they get on the road again. And as I mentioned, it's kind of like Brad's now kind of being like the negative one, even though Stacy literally just lost her fiance. So they're walking, and this was kind of the just like, this was like the core concept and scare. Man, they walk for like a good 3 minutes straight here. It's kind of all we have them doing. And then they turn back and they get to the cabin. And this was like the biggest scare there. And I think it falls flat just like the car starting. And I think it's almost one, because it's kind of expected. Two, because it's not really done. It's also during the day, which isn't that scary. But essentially they walk straight in one direction and then they end up back at the cabin. You know, textbook horror, we're walking in circles, something's messing with us. I think this does add to the element of the alienness and like the mystery of it, which some people do like again within the Discord and whatnot. But to me, this was just us falling so short on a trope and executing it so poorly. But with that being said, this is step one in learning something, you know, try and poorly execute something and then you learn from it and you can do it. So if you want to talk about this whole scare of, you know, seeing the house again, because I really feel like if I had to point to something of like the core, what would be the scene that we build from was this one. And man, didn't really hit in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, I think the two scenes that we really, like, I'm trying to look back on how, when we were doing the outline, this scene definitely was the one that was going to catapult us to the climax. Because it was like, all right, look, they're making progress. They're finally getting away from this place. You know, they're doing really well. They're soon going to be out of here and they can finally get help. Help's right around, you know, the corner, and then they turn that corner thinking that they're, you know, going to be out of this woods, and all their progress is lost and it's just back to the cabin. And when we were writing the script, I remember being very excited about this. I was like, this is going to be a great scene. It's going to be excellent. You know, the tension, everyone's like ready to just be like, yes, this movie's like, or the characters are, you know, there's going to be this release of relief. Like they're finally going to be free. And then you know, it's going to be thrust into the climax because this crazy, like, they're just trapped now. And this is a mental thing. Like, what's going on? Is it the aliens? And it just fell flat. It was during the day. It doesn't really make any sense at all. Because if you watch, like, where it comes from, like, Blair Witch, I believe, where they were just going in circles in the woods. Well, yeah, you can do that because this is the woods and there's no, like, objects to essentially give you a reference point. So walking around in circles isn't very difficult. This was like, there's cabins and roads and, you know, things that they should have known were there. So it kind of doesn't really make any sense. And because there was no real tension building up to it was the other problem. I think they were just talking for like a minute. So it never really had the tension. It never hit that. Because if you're going to do this, you need to make sure at this point, it's like all hope is lost. That's the feeling that you should get. It should be a gut punch feeling. And we were nowhere near that with this one. So that being said, you know, it's a learning experience. And I don't know if I'd ever do that again because it's hard to pull off. This is a tricky one. You do see it a lot in movies, that do this kind of thing, but I struggle to try and find ones where people have done it well. And usually in the indie horror movies that I've seen do this, I'm like, oh, here it comes. They're going to turn that corner and they're going to be right back where they were. And when I see it, I'm just like, ah, oh, geez, like we did that and gone. It doesn't work very well. So if you're out there, you're a filmmaker and you're writing this and your characters are running away from a spot and they're going to turn and it's going to bring them right back to where they were. Don't do it because it's very difficult to pull off.
Yeah, I think it really is the case where, you know, a swing and a miss is kind of the big thing. And it's one of those where, like, you know, you don't know until you know. And I think now we know because of all the movies we made when something's going to have an oomph and when something's not going to have an oomph. You know what I mean? So like, it's really easy to figure out just the different levels you're able to, you know, see with a spice. And like, you know, in hindsight now, when we look at it, of course, this one's going to miss it. And as you mentioned, the entire road scene was them just doing a dialogue. They're kind of fighting back and forth. She's like, this doesn't make sense. And then they get there, and Brad, what I like again is, you know, we talk about this in Girl in Cabin 13, when you have two characters, they have to take polar sides typically. And then these polar sides, you have Brad, who is now frantic of like, what's going on? This is ridiculous. This shouldn't happen. And Stacy trying to calm him down. And the odd part with that is Stacy should be way more frantic. Stacy literally has lost her fiance, and it just puts you in an awkward position as characters. When, like, at this point in time, and I think this is a good thing to kind of touch on this is about 3 minutes from the end of the movie for the most part. Like, this is 4 minutes away from the end. At this point in time, they're still doing this little horror back and forth of should we stay or should we go? Like, at this point in time for a horror movie, you should know what's out there, what's attacking you, and you should have your final desperation plan at this point in time. We still shouldn't be in the, well, what is this? What's going on? Let me try and, you know, get you out of this. And I think, again, it goes back to, you know, we learn this more and more. And now, like, ever since Girl in Cabin 13, typically when there hits that halfway point or just a little past the halfway point, it's like, all right, we're going 100 miles an hour. There's no stopping. So do you want to kind of, you know, talk about how you need to get into this critical phase, because it's something where this is where the pacing's the best, is when you can really speed through these things and you're just hitting, you know, issue after issue after issue. And it's no longer should we stay or should we go? It's how do we survive?
Yeah, I mean, right now our movies are about an hour 15, hour 20 minutes. I think that the best pacing we do is, you know, at the 30-minute mark, which is usually just under the halfway point, it's very clear that there's danger. It could be more clear to other characters than, or to certain characters than other characters. But there's danger, and there's tension, and there is risk involved. Their lives are in danger. Then at the 50-minute mark of the movie, something really bad happens where they're like, all right, we have to, like, get out of here. And they spend the next 10 minutes of the movie trying to get out something even worse happens at the hour mark, and then you have a 15-minute climax. That's the pacing that I think works the best. We've done it in Girl in Cabin 13. We've done it in Murder House, and we did it in Shapeshifter. And I think that those movies all are going to be watched much more highly than the other movies. And I think that having a good intro, having a lot of tension and clarity of your story at the 30-minute mark, having the point of no return, or them trying to all leave and they can't escape at the 50-minute mark, and then at the hour mark is you pretty much lose another character or something crazy happens that thrusts you into a 15 to 20-minute climax sequence, is the best way to make a horror movie. And this is, you know, where we are now. Obviously, I think it's probably going to change when we find out even better ways to do it. But as of right now, this seems to be the best structure that we're working with. And, you know, there's just, I think character motivations is another thing that is a huge issue with this movie. And it's still difficult for me when I write a screenplay. I actually have a time where I'll go back through the screenplay and just do a motivation check and just make sure that the characters are all doing what they need to be doing throughout the entire movie. Because it's, when you're writing multiple characters, it's very easy for you to have them flip motivations where some people will be very upset and angry and the other people will be like, oh no, this isn't too bad. Happens a lot. And it's just, I'm not really sure why it is. I think it's just because we write so quickly, but it happens a lot and you have to go back and fix the motivations. For the Shapeshifter, it happened a lot with a lot of the characters, but usually I'll do a couple of passes to make sure, double check on the motivations, make sure the character motivations are proper throughout the whole screenplay. And then when I start working with the actors, I always ask them, hey, is your motivation correct throughout this entire script? Because the actors are going to let you know whether or not their motivations are off, because they're really dialing on their one character. And I think that's the problem, is when you're writing a screenplay, especially with multiple characters, it can be difficult to drill into one character, because you're taking a bird's eye view of the screenplay and you're focusing on getting the plot going, as opposed to, you know, what are the motivations of in each individual character.
Yeah, I think that really kind of sums up, you know, when it comes to the overall pacing and how you should look at it. And again, it's our experience now and where we're at, but I think you see it very clearly, because that scene just comes off as pretty awkward in the sense of, you know, they're still kind of being like, don't worry, this isn't weird. This is really weird. So they're talking about rations and whatnot. And then actually, I would say this, you know, remaining last chunk, the kind of climax of the 3 minutes, is actually pretty good. So Matt comes back in, we get loud noises on the door, they open it up, it's Matt, and he's just mumbling. I liked this. I remember we wanted him to like write something or something. It was a unique way for him not being able to explain what was out there, and I think we did a pretty good job with it. So he's kind of like mumbling, and then he writes, you know, hide on this, and then the only weird part is then he runs back into the forest. So that's kind of the odd thing, where he runs into the house, runs hide, and then runs out of the forest. Then Stacy goes out there to see where he's at, and she gets yanked, which again, yanks are absolutely amazing, because you just speed them up and it's really, really good. And then our boy Brad, he gets dragged out with the lights, and then we cut to gone. So I mean, honestly, like, the action is good here. Like, the pool scenes were good here. Didn't really quite make much sense for Matt to run back into the woods, but hey, he's gone insane from whatever he saw with that flashing light. And then, yeah, the other thing was, it was just a strobe light effect. And we did a little after effect on the strobe to kind of do like some chaos, but I would say like, this is solid right here. This 3 second like kind of ender. So do you want to talk about the climax that we had and just the execution of it?
Yeah, I think it was solid. I just think this whole movie needed to be one night. I think it would have been much better one night, because it solved a lot of issues. I think it would have moved a lot faster. And I think that this climax scene where they're inside the cabin trying to figure out what needed to do could have been extended. Like, it could have been, this should have been at the 50-minute mark, like what I was talking about. The 10 minutes of them should have been in here. There's something outside. Then at the hour mark, the dude comes back. Blake comes back. It's not Blake in this movie. It's what's his name?
Matt.
Matt comes back. And then that, if all three of them are in there for that last 15 minutes of this movie, technically, if this was an actual hour, 20 minute movie, this would be a good 15 minute climax. Having them trapped in there. And then I would get them, like, if he goes into the woods, she gets grabbed and the creature comes into the cabin, then Brad goes in the woods. That's how it would end it, and have him running around out there in the woods. So I mean, it's there. I think honestly, this just needs to be one night. This would have been a much better movie if it was one night. I think it would have moved faster. The downbeats would have been less, and it would have just been more tension, more action.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And to kind of go back and highlight that, so we did a little exercise in the last episode. We're going to finish it up here, kind of how we get them, what we would look at changing. You were kind of mentioning it there. So somewhat from the last one we mentioned, it would probably either be like two brothers, potentially, if they're going out there with the dad, you know, kind of maybe rekindling their relationships. They meet the other two campers maybe early on. They grab a drink with them, again, all within one night. So they spread the ashes, they get the drink. This is when the lore, have you seen some things? We're hearing weird noise. Power isn't going on. We probably have another character in there, maybe like a conspiracy theorist or park ranger. So one more character to add in lore. That's always great to have an additional character to be the crazy person that, you know, if you have a character where someone can point to and say, don't listen to them, they're just being crazy. You typically have a good person to explain the lore to you. So I'd probably have that happen. It could be a pop scare. You know, again, hey, you trespassing. That's a favorite one that we like to do. So you have the trespassing one. Then in the middle of the movie, this is like we said, they'd probably go back to their cabins. And then in the middle of the night, one of the campers maybe knocks on the door and is like, hey, my fiance's gone. So you already have it. It's halfway through there. You're building it up. Maybe they go searching for them. Some weird stuff happens. Maybe they see something. It pushes them back into their cabin. And then from there, you know, there'd either be a sighting or something like that. Someone else would probably get murdered off. And then you're basically within the climax of it. So that's kind of how I would, you know, look at pushing it. And again, you got to get to the point where they see the cabin where they have to get away from it or go somewhere. What would you kind of do from that midpoint? You know, like I said, it's one day and we kind of left off with them, you know, someone's gone. So one of the characters is gone now. And like, it's the stakes are being stakes are rising right now, but they're not quite to the point of no return. So where would you kind of pick up from there for the Gone remake?
Yeah, I mean, I think having like a rancher character and like someone's killing his livestock or something is killing the livestock. And he's the one who kind of like drops the lore. He's like, this isn't any like coyotes or anything like that. He's like, these things are like just like picking the cows and the cattle clean. He's like, I ain't seen nothing like it. Build your lore. I still like the two brothers thing, because then you can kind of get your spice in there with their like broken relationship kind of thing. And then you need another character who just gets taken. At that point, I do the drag scare, and you know, you just need to just honestly follow what Gon has an outline, you know, in the movie where they would go looking. They'd at this point probably see the creature or see like a quick glimpse, sort of like what Signs was, where it kind of quickly ran across the tree line. They they try and go to get out of there. Their cars don't start, their cell phones don't work. They go back inside the cabin and try and figure out what to do. And that's when that person who got taken comes back and he's all messed up, his tongue is missing, or some kind of crazy things going on. Then they're stuck in this cabin and the creature's like right outside. It's like messing with them. That person goes crazy, goes outside. He gets like yanked. And then you have the two brothers running through the woods. And then however you want to, you know, if you want to kill them both, or if you want to have one sacrifice themselves, if you want like a sentimental ending, that's how you do it. Or they both two can survive. It's up to you at that point. That's probably how, like off the top of my head, I probably do this movie. One night, keep it clean, move it forward. And I think you have something. I don't know if it's going to be good.
Yeah, and I think the climax, that there's one I'm drawing towards, because I like the idea of an alien invasion, especially if you like science. So almost maybe have the story where it's like there's a rancher's like compound or something, like a rancher or a ranger's post. So like a ranger's post in the forest to get to. So they make their way up to the ranger's post because they're trying to like get help or get support or something. So they finally get there. They see that it's like rants, like this is like nothing's there. Like it looks like it's been like ravaged or someone has kind of like taken off quickly. And then I'd have it where they finally get like communication working, like radio. And I'd have it where there's almost like a emergency distress signal saying that like an alien invasion has occurred, like flee the cities. And then, you know, you kind of almost have a little twist of it where, hey, they're just experiencing one little sighting. It's not a single one. And I think that's just, you know, again, if you can have a little ending hook or twist or something like that, because with this movie, you know, he gets pulled out and there's no questions answered. So I think, you know, this is something to kind of talk to a little bit in the end, because I think the ending is pretty flat in the sense of nothing happens. We almost do a double ending in our movies now where we pull them away and sense like we chop it off. You know, here's exactly how it ended for this couple or this team or, you know, the characters. But then we have, but that's not it. You know, someone sees Sonny and the girl in cabin 13. Someone goes back to the murder house. You know, Joe ends up being part of the incident. Just all of these different things, we end up almost having a second hook to it. So you want to talk about how when you do have an ending, it's always good to think of what's that extra little twist to it to kind of answer your questions, but also leave it open. And if you do it correctly, you get really good feedback like we got in the murder house.
Yeah, I think, you know, just keeping it open-ended. Because number one, if it takes off, you could always easily put a sequel to it. But I think a lot of people, I think there's two people who watch movies, you know, the first people will watch a movie, they'll enjoy it, and, you know, they'll just move on to the next thing. And then there's the other group of people who watch a movie and are just like, they want to have a discussion about the movie. They want to figure out what's going on. They look into it deeper. And if you have like a little bit of an open-ended ending like that and keep it a little bit vague, I think those viewers really enjoy that because they enjoy trying to figure out like what's going on. And it kind of rewards them. And I've always tried to get people to, you know, when reviewing or looking at movies, don't say this was good or this was bad. I think those are really bad ways to review movies. And I don't think it's beneficial to the filmmaker. You know, what I'm trying to do is get a dialogue, a discussion going, you know, why do you think this was good? Why did you think this was bad? What would you do to change it? Or, you know, what do you think was going on here? What do you think was going on there? And I think that was what's going on why people like the girl in cabin 13 is they still were, we had a lot of questions like, well, what was going on with the people in the end? Is there going to be a sequel? Is, you know, did all the people die? Who's stalking Sonny? And, you know, we kept it super vague. I have the answers in my head, but I'm not going to tell you guys because I like to see the discussions. You know, I like to see that. I think it's very entertaining and fulfilling as a filmmaker to see people discussing the movie like that.
Yeah. And again, this is kind of, I think it takes something where you understand it. And, you know, as you develop and as you get better with filmmaking process, you end up learning, you know, how you can leave these open-ended twists without them kind of, you know, just being cheesy or a little bit too corny, which is the line that you have to walk as a filmmaker. But I feel like now we have a much better grip of it. Overall, though, I mean, you know, what are kind of in the ending thoughts of it? I still think Gone's just such an amazing achievement for being the first movie. But overall, you know, what are kind of your feelings as it's kind of done through there? You know, I almost kind of put Gone in a subcategory of its own because it is the first. So it is something a little bit more special. But with that being said, you know, I think it's really kind of shows just a brief outline of what's pretty classic for a lot of first time indie filmmakers.
Yeah, Gone holds a special place in my heart and I hold it higher than a lot of other movies just because, honestly, for what we created with our lack of experience, it's pretty phenomenal that we were able to do this and create this movie. And it's really not that bad of a movie. I've seen way worse indie movies come out. I think, yeah, it's a little slow. It's kind of awkward, but for the most part, for a first screenplay, it's really, really good. So I think, you know, I hold it. It's got a special place in my heart. And also, like, if this movie would have failed, DBS might have been in jeopardy. Like, this is the first one. The fact that it was so smooth gave me a lot of confidence to move forward. If this was a huge ordeal and we weren't able to get this uploaded and I spent all this money and we lost all this money, I think I would have been hesitant. So I think that this movie is up there with, like, The Girl in Cabin 13 as far as, like, pretty big milestones for DBS as far as would we be where we are now if these movies would have not worked. So I really think that Gone, you know, the fact that it worked out so well is just sheer luck that we were able to do this. But I really think that it's not that bad for a first-time filmmaker, first-time screenwriters. It's got a lot of characters. And, you know, as we discussed before, the pieces are there. It's just not, we didn't put them in the right places. And there's just small little things that need to be tweaked. But there's, I mean, that's the difference with a lot of movies, from making a really, really good movie to a movie that, or from taking a movie that's not very good to making a very, very good movie. Sometimes it's just moving small things around and just changing small little pieces up, which is why we recommend you guys make as many movies as possible, because you're going to slowly pick this stuff up over time. And this is how you make a good movie, is by, you know, the devils in the details and figuring out how to make each scene really hit, and how to properly pace a movie is how you get a really, really good movie.
Exactly. You know, you just won't know until you do it. And Gone was the very first one. And we're going to continue doing this scene by scene series. So our next movie is going to be The Invited, which, you know, again, has a whole sort of pitfalls and also things we did pretty well. So we're excited to hop into it. As always, be sure to take a look at our Discord community. That is the place to be. We make movies for our fans with our fans. That means you guys get a shaping, guiding role in what movies we film, how we end up doing our rough edits, a lot of things, a lot of fun things as well too on top of that. And you even can get cast in our films as well. So be sure to take a look at that. Also be sure to take a look at The Haunting of the Murder House, which is now on Amazon Prime. Please go ahead, give it a rent, give it a review. It absolutely means the world to us. But until then, have a good one.